Good evening. Before I start with this book, I wanted to tell you about something that came in the mail for me, an email. It's about a walk. I don't know whether you all know about this. It's a Buddhist walk. San Jose Buddhists are walking from here, starting at the Quaker Meeting House, and go on to Dharmapunt's Insight Meditation and Floating Zendo. So I don't know how they're managing that, and I don't know that any of us has been... You know about it?
The third annual. I did the first two.
Oh, you did, didn't you?
The Walk for Hunger. Right?
Yeah, the Walk for Hunger. Global Relief, yeah. It's called. And it is on October 6th, so it's quite a ways away still. But I thought we should keep this, and we can register. It costs some money.
You raise money.
You ask people for money.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then you walk as much as you can. That's the main thing. So maybe we could put this on the bulletin board so the information is here. But it's a global relief. It's for Buddhist global relief. Provide relief throughout the world, regardless of nationality, ethnicity, gender, or religion. Bearing in mind the Buddha's statement that hunger is the worst kind. So I think we're on 177. So basically, this is about the belief in the existence of things or the non-existence of things. And Buddha tells Mahamati that depending on our thinking, our world arises. We create a world by thinking it into existence. We create a self and opinions about whether things exist or don't exist. It's all a semantic problem, really, that we use words in order to try to identify and nail down each little thing and believe it's so. I'm going to need my glasses for this. So you can see already. We can say anything exists, but only provisionally and only temporarily. So it's we can say so, but it only for this particular time and place. So there's nothing fixed about anything. And if we get caught with thinking that things really exist, then we get confused. And if we think they really don't exist, we get even more confused. So it's the kind of thinking that is confusing from beginning to end. So it gets in the way. Buddha says there are two things people in this world depend on. They depend on existence and non-existence. And they, as they fall prey to existence and non-existence, they try to imagine escape where there is no escape. So if you set up the prison, you can't get out of it. Because it's just a bunch of ideas. It's a belief. When all this, at the same time, we're living and breathing just as we are. It's very odd, but we do that. And it causes a lot of grief. Buddha says, the people of the world think the world arises from causes and conditions that exist, and it does not do so in their absence. The world arises from existence. It does not arise from non-existence, is what they think. Anyone who would claim that, Mahamati says, the world has no cause. And how does the world depend on what does not exist? Once people think of desire, anger, and delusion as existing, they imagine the non-existence of desire, anger, and delusion. That by not perceiving their existence, the characteristics of their existence become still. In other words, we can argue ourselves out of it. They think because they don't perceive the existence of desire, anger, and delusion among Tathagatas and Pratyeka Buddhas, that they don't exist. They exist, and then they don't exist. So he's saying that Buddha started out existing with desire, anger, and delusion, and practiced real hard, and then it went away. And he says it doesn't work like that. So the nihilists regard to existence and non-existence of desire, anger, and delusion are nihilist with this view, because afflictions cannot be seen internally or externally, because their existence is different and not different. Desire, anger, and delusion cannot be seen internally or externally because they have no substance and because there is nothing to see. You can see the results of anger, delusion, but you can't actually see it. So it's not Tathagatas who are nihilists. The essential nature of Tathagatas, Shravakas, and Pratyeka Buddhas is liberation, because neither bondage nor the cause of bondage exist. If bondage existed, the cause of such bondage would be bondage. Mahamati nihilists who speak like this are referring to what has no appearance. It's just thoughts. It's just words. And in fact, Mahamati, this is why I say it's better to believe in a self as big as Mount Sumeru than to give rise to the vain and empty view of nothingness. Mahamati, the vanity of nothingness, is what characterizes nihilists. Falling prey to views and longings regarding individual or shared characteristics, they don't realize these are nothing but the perceptions of their own minds. Meanwhile, they see external existence as impermanent and disappearing from one moment to the next, and the continuity of the skandhas, the dhatus, and the ayatanas as passing away. And they imagine this is what transcends speech and words, but this is what is meant by nihilism. extremes of existence and non-existence are realms of the mind. Who purifies these realms stills their entire mind. When external realms are not perceived, their cessation does not mean nothingness. Everything is real, as it is in the realms of sages. Not due to a Buddha or some other teacher, not me or anyone else, things arise when causes combine. How could they be due to nothing? Who says things exist due to causes, then speaks of their non-existence, speaks of arising based on wrong views, falsely imagines things existing, then not. Who knows that nothing arises, also that nothing ceases, who sees everything as empty and still, transcends non-existence and existence. And the transcending doesn't mean going up in some heavenly realm. It means staying present to what we're actually experiencing, rather than trying to lay some extra idea on top of whatever is happening. So then Mahamati wants to know, what are the characteristics of attainment? What does it look like? How do we know its characteristics so that we too will attain unexcelled, perfect enlightenment and not be misled by speculations or the maras of other paths? And the Buddha said, listen carefully and ponder it well. And I will tell you. He says there are two ways of attainment. The way of attainment and the way of instruction. The way of attainment refers to the distinctive characteristics of personal realization that transcend the projections of speech and word, that lead to the passionless realm and the stages marked by self-awareness that are free from erroneous speculations, that overcome the maras of other paths, and that shine forth from inner awareness. These are the characteristics of the way of attainment. The distinctive characteristics of personal realization, transcending speech and words. This is the story of the transmission, a first transmission from Shakyamuni Buddha to his student, when everyone was sitting quietly and Buddha was supposed to speak. And instead of speaking, he raised a flower in silence. And then the student smiled. One of the whole crowd smiled because he understood beyond words what the Buddha meant. So that's one way of attainment. And then there are the characteristics of the way of instruction. And this refers to nine types of teaching. There are poems, there are metrical pieces, there are prophecies, there are classifications, sermons, miracles, all these things. And they are free from such characteristics as sameness and difference or existence and non-existence, and uses means appropriate to the person in teaching Dharma to help others attain liberation. So it's what we call skillful means, doing whatever it takes to help people see through the obscurations, the blockages, the confusions that everyone is carrying. he says, view projections of the world as illusions, as dreams, as banana tree trunks, which are held up from the outside, but there's nothing inside, which I never knew. So if our projections are unreal, where do they come from? And why? And why is ultimate reality not likewise subject to projection? These are heavy questions. So the Buddha told Mahamati, projections arise when there is attachment to the misperception of different objects. People are unaware that their attachments to projections of what they grasp and of the one who grasps are nothing but perceptions of their own minds. They fall prey to views of existence and non-existence in which they are abetted by the views of followers of other paths and by their own habit energies. And as they become attached to different external objects, the mind and what belongs to the mind gives rise to the projections of a self and what belongs to a self. So it's not that we perceive, it's that we misperceive. And based on our perceptions, we think, well, that's that over there and this is me over here. And that comes from grasping. He says, they fall prey to the existence or non-existence of different external objects that neither exist nor do not exist and that transcend the characteristics of views. This is true of ultimate truth, which transcends the characteristics of measurement, sensation, inference, analogy, and causation. Why, on the one hand, Bhagavan, does attachment to the discrimination of the existence of an unreal object give rise to projections, and on the other hand, attachment to ultimate truths does not give rise to projections? Aren't you teaching a false doctrine? Well, and the Buddha says it's not true that one projection arises and the other does not. Projections of existence and non-existence do not arise. Do not arise when the external objects that appear as existing or not existing are seen to be nothing but perceptions of one's own mind. So we don't project on things once we realize that that what we see is a function of our thinking, of our experience. It's what we know. He says, I tell foolish people that become the different because the different projections of their minds appear before them as objects, they become attached to the existence of their projections. That's the grasping again. How do they get free of views of attachment to a self or what belongs to a self and get free of the misconception of causation as cause and effect? By becoming aware that their projections are nothing but mind. Thus do they transform their body and mind and finally see clearly all the stages and realms of self-awareness of Tathagatas and transcend views and projections regarding the five dharmas and modes of reality. That's why I say projections arise from the attachment to things that are unreal, and that once someone knows what is real, they free themselves from the various projections of their own mind. Who sees the world like this, neither existing nor not existing, nor both of these, nor neither, transforms their mind and finds no self. What appears outside does not exist. All the things seen by the mind, your abode, body, and possessions, these I teach are nothing but mind. So, so we have projections which lead to attachment, and once we're attached, we misperceive what we see. We say, that's mine, that's not mine. I like it, I don't like it. I want it, I don't want it. That's a perception that create a projection that with a judgment attached to it and a grasping attached to that, so that we can't see that we're unaware that the projection of our grasping is our view of existence. We think it's existing because we're attached to the objects. And it's all a perception of self. We create a separation between myself and it, them, there, you, us. With us, we close the gap. With we, with I and you, we open it up. So, if projections don't arise when things appear, or we see them as projections, as the mind's projections, then see that causes and conditions exist as projections, and that projection is where the world comes from, our world. What appears outside doesn't exist, and all seen by mind are nothing but mind. So this is a different definition of how we perceive and experience things. And this is really the crux of this teaching about projections and the mind and the self. So it sounds as if the world then is, if it's not existing or existing, if it's all a projection of the mind, then what is the world? What? How can we be in this world of the mind? We can't ask that because we're already it. We're in the middle of it as it. And so all the permutations of our thinking, trying to figure it out, it's got to be this, or this, or this. What Buddha is saying is that's all just our perceptions, that we're creating every moment a realization of who we are and where we are. Or we create a story around who we are and where we are that separates us and distances us from the reality of our experience. So for a long time, in raising children, for instance, you think that era will never end. and operate as if that era will never end. And then all of a sudden it ends. And you realize that that was a really strange kind of misapprehension. And some people actually go a little nuts when their kids leave because they don't quite know how to bear it, because they've grasped those children and loved them and assumed that it would always stay the same. And of course nothing does. Nothing does. And it creates grief and confusion when we don't allow ourselves to see how things really are. It seems like inviting all the hard stuff in, but it's also inviting everything in. And the hard stuff, though it seems hard, is easier than living a lie. In fact, it's a great deal easier than living a lie. And once our grasping, once we're willing to let go of our perceptions of the way we think it ought to be, then we're free to experience how things are and be able to deal with them. So, other questions? Ryan?
Sounds like it's going to take a long time to get there from this analysis. But, you know, that's the method.
Well, yeah, as long as you hang on to...
So we have this kind of, I don't know what philosophical school was current at the time.
Yogacara.
There's a lot of kind of analysis.
Yes, it's the mind-only school.
We have Zen, which is supposed to be the school of sudden enlightenment, where we're supposed to realize... Well, I mean, it is taught that it is possible to realize this in some kind of, even gradually, but sometimes rather suddenly.
Well, there are all kinds of possibilities in that. You know that if someone asked Suzuki Roshi whether he got it slowly or fast, and he said it came very fast, but it took a long time.
Time is relative.
Well, that's the way it works.
I find this kind of thing fascinating on one level, but it, you know, it becomes kind of intellectual.
Well, if you think about it too much, and that's what he's saying, if you're thinking and trying to wrench it into something. What he's really pointing to is just you, yourself, right now, and your experience. Ellie?
In terms of cause and effect, am I hearing this right? That, I mean, what he's saying is cause and effect is a projection of our mind?
Yes.
So what about a forest fire or a tsunami? Those are all projections of our mind?
Well, yeah. They're experiences.
Our experiences are. We're projecting what... So I'm saying this is a terrible forest fire. I'm putting out my projection. But the
yes.
The forest fire
is.
It is.
It's yes.
If I weren't here, it would still be here.
Yes.
Okay.
It's like the tree falling in the forest. But since we're not there, we're just projecting ideas about it.
Okay.
And if we're in the middle of it, then we don't even have time to think.
We just get swept away.
Yeah.
But it is, I mean, there is something out there. Whether it is in itself a projection of some...
Yes, form. And then we project on it.
On it.
And yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll sit with that.